Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists type people. Tonight, do not miss it. Please tell your friends, mark it down so you don't miss the live show. You want to be there for the live show so you can ask questions. Kathy Andrews, the Unbroken Thread, is going to join us. And it's not going to be her latest design or anything. Kathy went through breast cancer. And I believe, I don't know the mastectomy level, but she did have at least one breast removed. And during that whole, I'm sure, nightmare journey, certainly a roller coaster ride, she used stitching, art stitching, to deal with her emotions and experiences and so on and so forth through the whole thing. And she made a video of it, and she has photos of it, and she is going to join us tonight and talk about how she used art stitching to deal with this traumatic life event. And do not miss it, because...
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a special thing. I applaud her for being willing to talk about it, because that cannot be easy. But she says it's important to share this, and she wants to do it. So thank you. And so 8 o'clock tonight on the Stitch Hour, Kathy Andrews, and it's impressive work. I mean, she's a skilled needle worker anyway, so you would expect that.
Oh, yeah.
But the various pieces she does when they're put together in a video, you can tell just where she's at all along the process. And, so don't miss it. That's tonight, 8 o'clock on the Stitch Hour. Tell your friends. You're going to it'll be worth it. Next Wednesday, Kathy Ray will be back for another session of Thread Talk, and then that will be the last Wednesday show until the 5th of January. Going to take a break with the Wednesday shows and a break with the podcast after the 18th or 19th, whatever Sunday that is. Then just going to take a break for the holidays and for my sanity. So. I say take a break, and I think I have 4 or 5 podcasts lined up in the next 2 or 3 weeks to record. So it's not really a break, but
so not a total break.
No. But I try to get ahead. I try to have them ahead, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it's hand to mouth. It just depends. Sunday. I say this every week, because I just so enjoy these and I learn so much from these things. Cindy Jackson is our guest Sunday. Cindy Jackson, some of the most amazing embroidery work that you'll see, design work, three-dimensional design work, gold work that you'll see. But then on top of it, just an incredible story of research of really old 15th, 16th century embroideries, Tudor embroideries. That's where she really specializes. The whole story with her is absolutely amazing. Learning how those were put together, emulating them, borrowing the techniques and using them, adapting them with today's threads, because the threads they had those days don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
On and on and on. We recorded a full hour with her, and there's easily another hour and a half show we could do just talking about what she does and what she knows. It's special stuff. It really is. So
that sounds great.
Sunday. Yep. Yeah. I just get excited about these things. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. I do too. You see stuff on Instagram and Facebook and websites and all that kind of stuff, but it's when you get to hear them talk about their art and answer questions, it really makes it a much fuller experience.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly. And well, that's why we do these interviews with these designers, because it is absolutely amazing all over the world what people know, what they've learned, the research, the studying that so many people do that just broaden our horizons about needlework.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing. And she's just one of many.
Well, not only what they do, but also their inspiration.
Yes.
You know, where they come up with their ideas.
Yep.
And then how they realize those ideas in their needle art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just amazing.
Yeah. Oh, these artists, that's, I don't think I'll ever not be amazed at how these artists see things and, like you say, yeah, inspiration, and all of a sudden they have this idea that, where did you get that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So, so Cindy is Sunday. Do not miss it. You will not regret spending an hour listening to that, because that is, yeah, it was really, really enjoyable. Now, okay, there's a thing we were talking about ahead of time that I think we need to get out for people to who are interested, because you're president of Cyberpointers, right?
Uh-huh.
I ask you that to confirm what we already know. So, yeah, that was just that was just really dumb, but whatever. but this whole program of Hearts for Hospice.
Yes.
When I was in Illinois, the Fox chapter did that a couple of years. I don't know if they still do it or not. One of the coolest programs, and you could, if you're not a member of ANG or not a member of an ANG chapter or whatever, you can still do this. Tell what you can about the Hearts for Hospice program, because it really is neat.
Okay, so just to let people who don't know, Cyberpointers is the online chapter of the American Needlepoint Guild. And one of our outreach programs excuse me, is to support the Kansas City Needlework chapter, and I forget what their name is, in their Hearts for Hospice program. And so what this is they have published in the ANG magazine, and I think it's somewhere online also, a heart shape that is their standard shape for this project. And anybody can stitch a heart in any technique they want and send it to the Kansas City chapter, and they will finish it into an ornament, and then those are given to their hearts to their hospice program. And when a patient is nearing the end of their life, they'll hang one of these hearts on the doorknob to just let everybody in the building know, you know, that someone is nearing the end. And then when the person passes, the heart is given to their family. And so I've been working on these hearts for a while. I'm actually doing them based on Michelle Roberts' Hearts of Gold, which is a current ANG correspondence course. And our face-to-face chapter started it a couple of years ago. And instead of using her heart pattern, which is pretty small, I'm using the Hearts for Hospice pattern. And I'll send you some photos to post. I have 14 done, and I'm just stitching them out of my stash.
Yeah.
And when I get them stitched, then I will send them to the Cyberpointers outreach chairman, and she will send them to Kansas City as part of Cyberpointers outreach program.
Yeah. Okay, and I'll put a link in the show notes for how to do that. But two things to emphasize here. One is, it's an ANG program, but that doesn't mean you have to do needlepoint. You know, like you said,
right,
any technique. If you want to do it in cross stitch, you want to do it in surface embroidery, white work, whatever, do it your mm-hmm. way.
And yep.
Create your own design, you know, whatever. But it does not have to be needlepoint. Basket weave wool, you know, it
can be, right.
It can be anything. And then the other thing that, use your stash. Yeah. Don't, uh-huh. Everybody has plenty of stash. Use your stash, for this good cause, and, help reduce the mountain of threads that you have piled up. But, it's just a really neat program. And,
and speaking of stash, if you have some quilting fabric or other kinds of fabrics that could be used as backing, they welcome that also.
Oh, okay.
Because they have to finish them.
Right. So, and that's the other cool thing is, yeah, you don't have to finish it.
Right.
Just do the stitching, please, and send it. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really cool stuff. So, So I'll,
yeah, I think you can probably put the name, a link into the contact person for Hearts for Hospice in the show notes.
Yeah, I will do that. Right. Cool. So that's something to do. You know, holidays, got a little extra time sitting around, put together a heart or two and send them off.
Yeah. And the dimensions are, I mean, they're about 4 inches, maybe 5 inches tall and 4 inches wide-ish. I don't have one handy here. But they're not big. They're not huge.
Yeah.
You know, it takes me a day or two to get one done if I really work on it. It kind of depends on the pattern I'm doing.
But that's just it. A scrap of ground cloth that's sitting around that you cut out, that got left after you cut something out, and some stash, put it together and make a heart and send it in. Yep. And do some good for families in a tough time. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so that's that. We'll put the links in, but I just wanted to make sure that people knew about that. So many of these kinds of little programs that go on that just don't get talked about enough that –
Right.
Do good for people.
Right.
Yeah. It's really, yep. Mm-hmm. There we have that. Okay. Now, talking about the holidays, this is a question that I have. And so I wondered what you, how you approach it. I don't approach it at all. So I just asked the question. But the question is, do you stitch holiday things, Christmas, Easter, 4th of July, whatever it might be, do you stitch them in the season or do you stitch them ahead of the season so that you have the finished piece when the season arrives?
So I don't really decorate for any particular season.
Well, then you're no fun at all.
I know. But I do stitch. I don't stitch a lot of Christmas stuff. Although, if there's something that strikes me as a cool pattern, I will stitch ornaments for my hairstylist and my nail tech and my massage therapist and my, you know, trainer, you know, to give them as little Christmas gifts. And I am doing that this year. I don't do it every year. I have to find a pattern that I like. And of course, I just decided to do this like 2 weeks ago. So I've dropped everything else and I'm stitching like mad on these ornaments for my peeps. But yeah, I do like Halloween kinds of things, but I kind of stitch on them whenever, you know, something strikes me, I'll pick it up and stitch on it. I don't do it for a particular event because I don't really decorate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, there we have that. Because it's just, you see it like when Halloween comes up, all the orange and black stuff comes out.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And to me, that should be coming out in May and June.
To stitch.
Right. So that.
Well, and actually probably even before then, because you have to not only get it stitched, but you have to get it finished.
Right. Right.
And if it's something that requires finishing rather than framing. You know how busy finishers are.
Right.
Year round.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to get stuff in. So for Christmas, you probably ought to be stitching next year's Christmas now.
Right. Right. At least 4th of July stuff, red, white, and blue now. Yes.
Unless you finish it yourself, you know, and then it doesn't. Yeah.
I just think it's interesting because, you know, you see that where – do we plan ahead or is it the excitement of the season that makes you want to do red and green or pastel colors for Easter or spring or whatever? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, and of course, you know, the designers are all working, you know, probably 6 to 12 months ahead.
Right.
I mean, they're publishing, not working 6 to 12, they're probably working 2 years ahead. They're publishing 6 to 8, 12 months ahead for those people that do want to have things ready for the whatever holiday.
Yeah. 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 Designers, when they release a Christmas chart in November That thing's old and dusty to them.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I did that. I did that 18 months ago. I probably shouldn't release it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just something that, because you see a lot of people stitching on stockings now and ornaments and so on and so forth. And you're not going to have that till next Christmas. So let's.
Right.
Start on that in the spring or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah.
So you don't do ornaments.
No, I don't.
Or
no.
Themed.
Nothing. No.
Kinds of things. So.
No. None of it. None of it.
So do you decorate? Probably you will now since you're close to the grandkids, right?
Well, Marga does. I don't.
Well, yes.
Yeah, Marga does the full Christmas thing. And that you're exactly right. We had, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, last couple at least, where we didn't even bother to put up a tree.
Mm-hmm.
And this year now we have a little 4-foot tree on her table, and she, all kinds of decorations. Of course, we didn't move a lot of that stuff. We got rid of it, and then, and of course, we get to buy more. But
yeah.
I'm not sure about the logic there, but whatever. So the house, she's fully decorated the house, and it looks great. It's very festive, but but you do it because the grandsons have been over. They stayed overnight last weekend, and they're here, and you got to make Christmas for them. And
And we don't have any little kids nearby in our family to decorate for. So
yeah,
my mom has a little porcelain Christmas tree, a Lennox, that, you know, has colored light thing in it. It's 12 inches tall. She puts that out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty much the extent of her Christmas decorating, and I don't even do that.
She at least acknowledges the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we don't. We just gotten away from it because it's just, to me, it's just work. So, we have a yard, we have a crutch thing goes in the yard that we put out every year. We've always done that. But the rest of it, whatever. But now this year we're decked out. Wreaths, centerpiece, pine needles, those scented cones, you know, where they spray them with the cinnamon pine scent thing, you know. He's open a window, somebody. But yeah, no, she's made the new home all Christmas beautiful, so it's really nice. But whatever. Yeah, I give her credit. She's hung in there several days of decorating. Bravo. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
I don't know. I long ago. I mean, once our kids left, grew up and got married, I just kind of, just quit doing it.
So. Well, yeah, I mean, it really is for the kids. And,
yeah, yep.
And when it gets to the point to where it's just work,
yeah,
not only to decorate, but also, work, it's always work to take it down. But when it gets to the point where putting it up is work, then
yeah,
what's the point?
Right. Yeah, see, what I miss, the last couple of years with this stupid pandemic is the church part.
Oh, yeah.
That I miss that. We have not found a church here, and every time we think that we're going to go try a church or two, they're having an outdoor service because of COVID or, we haven't felt consistently comfortable to go to an actual sanctuary. And,
right.
My church these days is Sharon Bruce, who is a regular listener and participant. Her brother is the rector at St. George's Church in Belfast, Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm up. I'm pretty good at it. I'd say eight out of 10 Sundays in the morning, Sundays in a given time, I get up at 5 o'clock and watch their online service.
And, oh, okay.
So I get my church that way.
Yeah.
But, that's – so I miss that. I miss the handbell choir. I miss the whole preparing for a Christmas concert and sharing Christmas music. That, yeah, I miss that desperately. But, someday I think, I hope.
Yeah, it'll – eventually we'll get back to some semblance of normal.
I hope
so.
I
don't know how long it'll take, but
I hope so. I was stitching the other day, and it came to my mind because you hear about people, and you're probably one of them, basically electric needle people who just crank stuff out left and right. And I am a slow stitcher, always have been. I don't pretend to be fast or even try to be fast. But I was thinking about all the things I do or maybe I don't do that don't get stitches made, like when I'm stitching. And I was sitting there, I got a football game on, I'm stitching. I got interested in the football game, then I made an error in the stitching and had to had to undo it. And then when I went to undo it, I discovered there was a knot in the back that I hadn't noticed. And so I was thinking, I wonder how many, I should make a little list on the side of how many ways and things that I do that keep me from putting in more stitches. And it just seems to me like I need to work on being more efficient.
No, you don't.
Oh.
Just enjoy it. It's a process. I do that too. I get distracted by something or other, or I look at a pattern and start stitching and then don't look at it again. I did this with one of the little ornaments that I'm making and got all the way around and then looked to see what I was supposed to do next and discovered that I'd missed 4 stitches on each side that I should have put in.
Okay. Oh, good. That made me feel better. Thank you.
Because I thought I knew what I was doing.
Yep.
So out come the scissors and I just cut the whole thing out and start again, looking at the chart more carefully, more frequently.
Yeah.
It's all part of stitching. I don't really think too much about what keeps me from producing whatever. I do like to finish things. I am a finisher. I want to get stuff done.
Yeah.
But I also like the process. So knots on the back, making mistakes, unstitching, that's all part of the process. And yeah, it's frustrating if you have to. And if I've made a mistake and it doesn't really affect what I've done, like on a cross stitch or something, sometimes, a lot of times you can get away with fudging things on a cross stitch.
Right.
Or even a needlepoint. If you can live with the mistake, that's fine. If I can't live with it, then I take it out. And that's just part of the process.
Yep. Well, I
don't really get too carried away with it.
Okay. All right. I feel more normal then. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was cooking along on this motif on this reproduction sampler, and there's a little a vase, and so I put in enough of the base of the vase so that I could do the branches for the flowers. And I get up to the main flower, and I had it just about done. And that's when, I discovered a knot on the back, and I could – it was one of those where I just – I can't deal. I have to have the knots out. I can't leave those. And
I don't like knots either.
So I undid the knot in the back, and sometimes you can pull the threads through, but this particular one, it was branches and it meandered all over the place. So to correct that was going to take far more time. It was worse. So out come the seam rippers and just take it out and and then once you take it out, then oh geez, I really need to go back to here to get a good clean start and. Yeah, so that's what happened.
It's all part of the process.
Yeah.
A few curse words and
yeah, there were a few of those, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I expressed my feelings.
Calling yourself an idiot and yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I expressed my feelings quite clearly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to no one. To absolutely no one.
Yeah, right. Another good thing about having your own space, right?
Right. Right. Yeah, no, I was quite clear about my feelings. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. But you didn't turn off the game, did you?
No, I did not. I hung in there with the game, and actually, once I got it torn out, I just put my feet up and watched the rest of the game. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I found that is a key thing for me. If I've made a mistake, and it's a significant one, I take it out. And then I usually stop unless I feel like going ahead and stitching some more. But I make sure that I have taken the mistake out so that when I start stitching the next time, I don't have to undo. I can just go ahead and stitch.
Mm. So you're a positive note to start. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because, you know, you pick something up and you go, oh, God, I've got to fix that. Yeah, I forgot that I screwed this up. Now I've got to fix it. And then, you know, by the time you get that all taken out, maybe you don't really feel like stitching, so you put it down.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
So I've done that. Even I used to make a lot of my own clothing. I did the same thing then. If I made a mistake and had to rip something out, I ripped it out before I quit stitching.
Okay.
And then when I came back to it, you know, I could sit down at the sewing machine and put, you know, just start fresh and put it together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a practice that I've used for a long, long time. And it serves me well. I guess I can't say I probably do it all the time, but I try to do it most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do that too. I rip it out. If I've got an error, I will rip it out before I walk away. But and a lot of what drives me to do that is because at that moment is what I remember what the problem was, and mm-hmm. I remember how, and I know then how far I have to go back so I can start
right.
clean. And
right.
the times that I have not, it actually made it more work. Because I couldn't remember, I couldn't remember where the last thread had ended.
Good point.
You know, yep. And so I do it while it's fresh in my mind. And then I usually try and get going again mm-hmm. before I leave it. But like the other night, I ripped it out and I was just really irritated. So
mm-hmm.
And then I haven't gotten back to it. So it's just sitting there right now, ready to go. But do you take one thing that I was taught, and that I do try to practice, is when you end a session, when I end a session anyway, I always start the next thread and get a stitch or two in so that when I sit down to stitch, then I just pick it up and go. Do you have any tricks? Do you do any tricks like that?
No.
Okay.
I usually will end a thread and then just, you know, stop there so that I'm, and of course that makes it a little more difficult for me to pick up because I've got to decide which, you know, where I'm going to start. So I'm working on a cross stitch piece right now that's kind of complicated. And when I start the next thing, I have to kind of figure out where I want to go next. And so if I did what you suggested, I would be able to pick up my needle and start stitching instead of having to take time figuring out what I'm doing next.
Yeah.
And I've heard you mention that before, and I don't think to do it, but I think it's a good idea. On needlepoint pieces, I tend to just end my thread and then rethread when I'm ready to start stitching again. I don't leave a thread hanging on those, usually. Sometimes I do, but most of the time it's not a matter of starting the next thread to be ready when I start stitching. It's because I got interrupted in the middle of something and had to put it down.
Yeah. Now that really has served me well, is because then I literally do. I pick up. I don't have to figure out, well, what color was it? Where am I at? Where was I? You know, what was the stitch path I was on?
Right.
You know, I can just pick it up and go, and it does. It, for the most part, it gets me off and running and making progress right out of the gate. And then rather than having a monk, because you can spend a lot of time just getting reoriented, especially if it's been 3 or 4 days.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's right, we're working on this, and this was going here, and I need to do this. And
find your spot on the chart.
Yeah. Do you mark your charts?
Yes. And I... said that kind of in a qualified way, because that kind of leads us to one of the other topics we had, and that's going paperless. I've just tried that recently. I can't remember if we talked about this before. The cross stitch project I'm working on is a really old chart, mm-hmm. and it's hand drawn. And I don't know how many different threads there are, but there's a number of them. And so many that she had to go to letters for symbols.
Mm-hmm.
After she used up all the symbols she could come up with. Hand-drawn on basically what is an 11 by 17. So it is a chart, you know, on cardstock.
Yeah.
And folded in half to make a leaflet. And I was having trouble reading it. And so I tried enlarging it, and then I just had big pieces of paper that were hard to handle. So I took it back to a copy place and had them scan it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried opening it in, I can't remember the name of that software that all the Hague people use. I tried opening it in that, but it scanned just slightly off square.
Oh.
And so the program couldn't read it. So then I opened it up in Adobe, and that works great. And I can mark off what I've done, which I don't really do it as I go. I kind of stitch a lot, and then I go back and mark off what I've stitched. I don't mark it off until I've done the back stitching, because the back stitching.
Well, that's interesting. Okay.
Crossed off with Adobe, it's not like marking off each square. I'm, using a highlighter and
right.
covering whole lines, and it's opaque. So I can't see the back stitch. So I don't mark it off until I've done all the back stitching. And I do the back stitching as I go. I don't wait to do it till the end. And the nice thing about it is that I can expand it. You know, if I'm having trouble figuring out what the symbol is, I can enlarge it a little bit on the screen, and that helps me figure out what it is. I like it a lot.
Hmm. Okay.
I can, my tablet it's not huge. It's, easy. It's a little too heavy to rest on my scroll bars, because the floor frame I have is an Artisan Designs, and it just holds the frame on one side, like most of them do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, if I put the tablet on the scroll frames, it drags it down too much, on the side away from where it's clamped.
Right.
But I have a separate arm on my frame that holds a place for threads and stuff like that. And it has a backboard that I can, I could put a chart there if I wanted to, but instead I put the tablet there.
Yeah.
And I can pull it close, and I can, see it easily, and it's working really great. I really like it a lot. Mm.
That's interesting. Yeah. Cause I've wondered that, more and more designers are making charts available as PDF downloads.
Uh-huh.
And I got to believe that trend is going to continue. And, I use Goodreader. When I have done it, I've scanned on my printer, scanned the piece, and then make a PDF and put it in Goodreader.
Uh-huh.
And then I just discovered a new piece of software for PDF reading that looks like it has better annotation flexibility. It's called Flexil, F-L-E-X-C-I-L.
Okay.
And I've just played with it a little bit, but it looks like it has really flexible and useful annotation capabilities. And so mm-hmm. it was free. And so I'm trying that out. What I've learned, this whole question of whether to go paperless is interesting. What I've learned is when I got my iPad Pro, one of the pieces of software that I bought was Good Notes. So there's good there's good reader, which is a PDF handler and reader, and then there's good notes. And I use good notes for everything. Like I don't use paper at all for work or really for anything anymore. It's pretty rare. I think the only time I print out anything on paper is for the Wednesday night show, because usually my tablet is being used to as a camera to display photos or whatever. So I will print the notes out for that. But like when we record these things, everything is on my tablet, all of our notes and everything.
Yep.
So I'm not using paper at all. And so GoodNotes has proven to be really effective for that. But as a PDF reader, it's not the best. So GoodReader is what I've used. And then this Flexel. And there's two or three YouTube people, mainly students, who do videos about how to take notes in classes and how to fix them up so that they with illustrations and so on and so forth. And they're really quite impressive in what they do. And so I follow two or three of those, and I've learned an awful lot about going paperless and how to take advantage of this software, various packages, so that you can really have everything and anything that you would normally write down available to you and have it editable and changeable and all kinds of things. So it's an interesting thing, and I just wonder, if we're, as Stitchers, if we should be heading in that direction, is there a real benefit? And, and of course, there's always going to be people who say, I got to have that paper chart.
Oh, yeah. And, some of it is younger versus older, of course. The younger people are used to digital formatting of things and, not printing things out or taking notes by hand or whatever. While those of us that are older, that's what we grew up with.
Right.
I've got so much paper, I don't really need any more paper. And, when you've got a big chart, if you've blown it up so that you can read the symbols easier or whatever, then you've got multiple pieces of paper and shuffling all of that and then making sure that you are overlapping them correctly. Especially if you've blown it up so that you don't see what the chart has for overlap, because most charts that are multiple pages do show where the overlap is. You really have to pay attention. Pattern Keeper is what I was trying to think of, and I've got an Android tablet. I don't think they have Pattern Keeper for iPad yet, but I think I saw something that said they were coming out with it. I did pay for Adobe to get the ability to annotate.
Mm-hmm.
The free reader, you can see stuff on it, but you can't annotate or mark things off.
Right, right.
So I went ahead and paid for the basic subscription. It's not all that expensive. And I think it was worth it because I really have – it's helped me move through this, I think, quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's something to look at, but then when I look at, if I'm doing a reproduction sampler, then I will copy the chart and then I cut it up.
Right.
And put that, so that's under my magnifier. So when I'm stitching, I can see the chart right there under the magnifier right next to the stitching. And so, yeah.
Uh-huh. And I think that's great for something that it has discrete elements. What I'm working on, it's not a HAID, but it has an awful lot of color changes and elements that run into the next element. And I think I've sent you a picture of it. It's the Goblin Market.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. I'll send it. I'm actually getting close to – I should finish it this month. I'll send you a picture of where I'm at right now.
Okay.
Create a post with this episode. Cutting the chart up I think for this one probably would have made things worse for me. But where you have discrete elements, you know, an alphabet or a motif.
Yeah.
I think that's a great way. And you know, I cutting things up is, you know, kind of taboo to me. I don't even write in books. But of course, you know, you make a copy of your chart and cut that up. Nobody cares about that.
Right.
So yeah, but it never would have occurred to me to cut something up.
And, right. Well, and that's where it really pays off with samplers is exactly that. I make a copy and then I cut out the motif I'm working on and uh-huh. then it's all right there and I'm not looking over to the left or up or down or whatever. I'm just looking into the magnifier for the whole thing. And it does make it much more efficient. And then when that particular motif is done, into the basket goes the little scrap and out comes the next one. And it does work really well. So, I don't know. The whole paperless thing, I can see a path that makes it the norm. But then it seems like there are always going to be exceptions where you just can't. You really need to have a piece of paper to do the job right. And I think we're getting to the point where the printing of charts is going to start to dwindle, and more PDFs. And it's interesting from a local needlework store perspective too. Is you know, can you free up some shelf space because you don't have to carry a bunch of charts? And then do you have mm-hmm. them all on the website and somebody just pays to download the PDF? Think of the additional charts you could have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it'd be interesting to talk to somebody like Kathy or Deb at Stitchville. To see, you know, if that's something that they're thinking about, you know, those two shops in particular are both really large shops. Yeah. I've never been in Needle in a Haystack, but it has to be a huge shop.
I would think.
With all the stuff she's got. Oh, well, and the attic. That's a pretty good size shop, right?
Yeah. Yep.
But there's so much that they can't carry because they only have so much room and they've got to have all the threads and everything. So maybe, you know, maybe they have a good photo
mm-hmm.
or a model.
Yep.
And they say, you know, if you want this, you know, pay for it and we'll give you an access code
right.
to download it. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if that isn't where things head eventually. And especially as more shops close
mm-hmm.
and you know I think a lot of designers will decide to have their own. A lot of the designers now have their own websites that you can purchase charts directly from them.
I struggle with that.
I do too.
I really do, because if you're gonna do it, be a designer, and you're going to offer your charts for sale on your website, but then you're counting on mm-hmm. stores to kit them up. You know, is it at cross purposes? I wonder about that a lot. How is that relationship between designer and stores going to evolve as the, because a lot more of the designers are making PDFs. Here, buy it from me, download it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, on the other hand, it should, so my opinion, right? It shouldn't matter to the store because the threads and the ground cloth are much more expensive, you know, than the chart itself.
Yeah.
So the store is, right, if you bought everything at the store, you know, that adds to the store's income.
Right.
But the store is going to get income even if you only buy the fabric and the threads there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. And you can see stores that might have an area with a couple of computers and printers where you pay, print out your chart, and then go get kitted up. Yeah. And then all that space for racks and racks of charts gets freed up. There might be some extra tables for workspace or any number of things. Yeah. I
mean, or bring in more thread lines.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but I think the pandemic is driving some changes here in the way things are handled. And I mean, you can see a store owner, a savvy store owner, saying, "All right, all this space with all these racks. Look what I can do with this. Mm-hmm. If I don't have it, here's two computers and two really nice printers to get a good quality printout. Buy your chart there. Yeah, here's a catalog of pictures." You already know what you want because you came in looking for the chart. So print it out. Mm-hmm. We'll kit it up, and out the door you go. Yeah.
And I think another advantage to that would be that you wouldn't be stuck with all these old charts.
Oh, good point. Yeah, yeah.
Those old charts take up so much room, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with them. They're perfectly good charts. But, you know, they're not in vogue anymore. You know, it's people aren't doing that particular style these days. And so they just sit there on the chart racks and take up space. Yep. And I know shop owners have trouble moving those things, those older charts, you know, whether it's cross stitch or needlepoint or whatever, you know, they go in a file cabinet on the shop floor and nobody ever looks in the file cabinet or, you know, it increases their inventory that doesn't move.
Well,
if you have a PDF, that's not a problem. Right. You have one copy that's the store copy and you print them on demand. Now, you know, there would have to be some kind of arrangement with the designer.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd pay the designer your normal whatever the designer gets paid for every copy that's sold.
Right.
Because otherwise it's copyright infringement.
Right. Well, I mean, they do that. That's workable because they do that in the music industry. You know, every time it's played, every time. So that's quite doable.
Right.
Yeah. Think about, that's a good point. How many shops have just a ton of old inventory that not only is it not making them money, but it's costing them money because it's taking up space that can't be used for new things.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a breaking point where old charts are now an expense.
Yep.
And
I would think so.
Yeah. I know for a fact that there is. And so they're an expense. And you basically put them on sale and give them away just to get them out because you're eliminating expense. But, yeah, if all those were just in a database and all that space could be a whole new line of threads,
I think we just invented a new shop, new kind of shop.
I think we just did. All right, well, on that very positive note, why don't we just stop? We just solved all the world's problems, so let's stop.
Okay.
All right. That's going to be it. Join us tonight, Kathy Andrews, Art Stitching with Kathy Andrews. Do not miss it. Sunday, Cindy Jackson. Don't miss that. Thanks, Cindy. That was fun.
Thanks, Gary, and happy holidays to everybody.
Yep. Thanks for listening.